Tot 8 uur de boeddhistische omroep met De Middenweg. Presentatie Marloes Lazal.
Goedenavond. Vorige week kon u luisteren naar het eerste deel van een interview met de Britse componist Jonathan Harvey, die dit jaar in het Holland Festival aanwezig is met zijn boeddhistische opera Wagner Dream. Vanavond kunt u luisteren naar het tweede deel van het gesprek dat Jacqueline Oskamp met Harvey had, waarin hij vertelt over de rol van spiritualiteit in zijn muziek. Die ontvankelijkheid werd gewekt toen hij als jongetje van 9 twee keer per dag met het plaatselijke kerkkoor optrad.
It was a great experience. Somehow it was almost special because there were very few people around. It was right in the middle of the countryside, and it was a church music establishment set up in the 19th century for music. We achieved quite a good standard, I think, and we had a very big repertoire, and we sang every morning and every evening in the church, and we practiced twice a day also. A lot of music for a little boy of 9 or 10. And we had to have a normal education and play football as well. It was a great life. Really, we were living in music. We all learned 2 or 3 instruments on top of singing.
Incredible.
Yeah, and it influenced me very much because it was done just for its own sake or the glory of God, you know. There was no one there. We weren't performing. We were just doing it for its own sake.
No audience.
No. I mean, a few other boys from the school, but even they only came in the evenings, not for the morning service. That gave me a kind of idealism that we're doing it because it makes communication with a higher world in some way, with another world. Otherwise, why do it? We weren't doing it for ourselves. Must be for somebody.
We zongen elke ochtend en avond in de kerk en we oefenden 2 keer per dag. Naast het zingen leerden we allemaal ook 2 of 3 andere instrumenten. Dat was veel muziek voor een jongen van 9. Het had grote invloed op me, want er was niemand aanwezig bij die diensten. Die werden opgedragen ter meerdere glorie van God. Dat gaf me het gevoel dat we communiceerden met een andere, hogere wereld.
How did you arrive at Buddhism?
Yes, well, it's quite a long track. I'll be very brief. After being an atheist as a teenager, I then began to get very, very interested in Christian mysticism. I just happened to pick up a book about Christian mysticism, and I read about the psychology of it as much as anything. A wonderful book. And I began to feel some resonances myself, because I was fairly solitary sort of child. I used to love long walks by myself, and I'd always felt fairly mystical things, you know, in nature. And in these writings, I began to recognize things. Something in me, I said, it's not just me, or it's not, but there's a whole science of this, or there's a whole body of system, and an entire church has been built on it. I mean, I just began to realize that, the nature of mystical Christianity. So I became quite fanatical about it all as a student at that time. At the same time, I learned a little bit about Eastern philosophy and its influence on Christian mystics. Meister Eckhart and people like that were very much influenced by the Indians. Well, the next was Anthroposophy and Rudolf Steiner. Someone introduced me to that. I read about 40 of his books and became rather influenced in my music by this visionary of auras and lights and sounds and the nature of the world, the material world. He was a mixture between a scientist and a seer. He again sharpened my enthusiasm for the search, you know. And then I went to transcendental meditation for a while and learnt the Hindu techniques, the Vedic techniques, very old, quite simple and very effective for stilling the mind. And that formed a habit of twice daily meditation, which I've never dropped. So that was good.
Als tiener was ik atheïst. Daarna raakte ik geïnteresseerd in de christelijke mystiek. Vervolgens las ik zo'n 40 boeken van Rudolf Steiner. Later ben ik een tijd lang transcendente meditatie gaan doen, wat nog steeds de basis vormt van mijn meditatie, 2 maal per dag.
But for one reason or another, I wanted something more concrete, more structured, I think. And so I turned to Buddhism. Having kind of resisted it for a long time because many friends had said, oh, you must have a look at Buddhism. That's just what you need. And I somehow hadn't.
That's killing.
Yes, yes. I think I preferred the multitudinous nature of the imagery, all the gods, the wonderful sculpture, the wonderful music of Indian philosophy and art. That all went with the meditation for me. I loved the bhakti side of it, you know, the devotional. To be devoted to a god or a goddess or a figure was great for me. And Buddhism, I thought, this is about emptiness. This is seeing through the reality of everything. But eventually I arrived there and I began to see the truth of all this. And I found in Tibetan Buddhism all the gods and goddesses I wanted. Of course, in a sense, they're all empty. But they're there and they're an important part of the skill of sharpening your technique of understanding and practice.
Ik had me lange tijd verzet tegen het advies van vrienden om in het boeddhisme te verdiepen. Ik hield van al die goden, muziek, kunst, filosofie van het hindoeïsme. Ik dacht dat het boeddhisme ging over leegte, door de realiteit van dingen heen zien. Maar in het Tibetaans boeddhisme vond ik alle goden waar ik zo naar verlangde. En begreep uiteindelijk dat ze inderdaad op een bepaalde manier leeg zijn.
In your pieces, you're using different kind of texts, Christian texts, Buddhist texts, Sanskrit, also Rudolf Steiner.
Yes.
What are you looking for?
That's a very interesting question. And if I could answer it, I probably wouldn't write any more music. So the music itself is a kind of quest. I listen to the music when it's played, and I say, what are you saying to me? Although I said it, did it myself, I look for it to have something that I don't know about, curiously enough. I kind of put it out there on the paper, hoping to discover something when I hear it. May sound odd, but there's something of that anyway. Obviously, I know what it's going to sound like, but I don't quite know the spiritual power of which it may be capable if I've done it right. And there's also, in composing, some element of the unconscious. You know, you just let it come through you, and you don't really know what it is, but you just let it flow through you in a meditation or something, it happens. And perhaps later you expect to find something. So that's really the quest for me. It's a composer's quest through music. Of course, I go to teachings, and that's wonderful. I learn a lot through the spoken word in the teachings. But through meditation and listening to music and composing it, it's another thing of the same sort as teachings.
But I mean also in these texts, are you looking for a special quality or a special idea in these different traditions?
Yes, each tradition and each text has some aspect of the numinous, deeper knowledge. So they're all a research into knowledge. I only choose a text, I think, if it's part of the research. They're very different, perhaps you would say. I mean, you can take a story here or a saying there or a ritualistic chant there, which has some special function, or a prayer, or many different types of text, but they all come from the same root, which is some inspiration, looking for the numinous, looking for something which in Buddhist terms I would call empty, which is beyond, the wisdom beyond. Wisdom is a good word too, of course. And I think it's a long journey. I mean, it certainly is, probably many lifetimes. But at least one knows, I think, that there's something there, that it's worth going along this path. You're sure there's something there, aren't you? I mean, you get that sense of being sure. But many, many and varied are the expressions of it in texts and in music.
Voor mij is de muziek zelf een soort zoektocht. Als ik noten op papier schrijf, hoop ik iets te ontdekken dat ik zelf ook nog niet weet. Elke religieuze traditie en elke tekst heeft een aspect van het numineuze, een diepere kennis. Ik gebruik een tekst alleen als ik denk dat die onderdeel is van dat zoeken. Dat is een lange tocht die waarschijnlijk vele levens beslaat.
I think I might say that your music is not really meditative.
No, no.
But how do you express your ideas musically?
It's a very difficult question for me, in that I suppose the music is not, on the whole, liturgical music. Some of the Christian music, maybe. But it's not music you would use for meditation, because it's more the journey of transformation that interests me. To have the textures of life, the sufferings, the rich experiences of life as part of the art, and show within that texture the possibility of salvation, the possibility of expanding it. It's a matter of expansion rather than something else. Whereas you'd go to a beautiful chant or some sacred piece of music if you wanted something for meditation, that's clear. Something probably very simple, even on one note, would be best for meditation. And you'd get your mind extremely free from everything. But I've not been able to write much music like that. Maybe someone like Arvo Pärt or John Tavener and so on are doing that kind of thing. I think it's, for me, more important to show the way, show a pathway through finding something that is familiar to people and how to make a journey from that place or within that place even. So you return to where you began and see it for the first time with a different pair of eyes. That's often the kind of theme.
So it's about transformation.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And then electronics is important?
Yes, electronics is part of that transformation. You're transforming your violins or your tubas with extensions outwards. They don't sound unlike a violin, but they don't sound very like a violin either. You make the connection, but there's an interval. It's either a big interval, not like a violin, or it's a small one, almost like a violin. And between those two things, there's a whole interval of musical scale to play with. And the music is all about intervals of time and pitch and so on. So it's the same with transformation. Sometimes things are very transformational, sometimes only just a tiny bit of magic, a tiny bit of transcendence. Other times, and perhaps rarely, I think I've caught something which really takes one into another world.
Mijn muziek gebruik je niet voor meditatie zoals die van Arvo Pärt of John Taverner. Ik ben meer geïnteresseerd in de weg van transformatie. De rijkdom van levenservaring en lijden is deel van mijn kunst. En daarbinnen wil ik de mogelijkheid tot bevrijding laten zien. Het gebruik van elektronica is onderdeel van die transformatie. Soms vindt er een grote verandering plaats, soms maar een klein beetje magie.
I'm writing a work at the moment on the theme of angels. And that also has a kind of angel song, which is a very slow oscillation between two chords or two complexes with a crescendo from one and diminuendo in the other. So it's like in-breath and out-breath, getting louder, getting softer in these two alternating things, which can go on for many, many minutes. And in this way, one has a sort of rhythm of the breathing of God, the breathing of the universe, or whatever one likes to call it, a kind of primordial breathing, possibly to do with birth and the mother, which I think is a very powerful image, which incidentally is very close to how I conceive of the voice. It's always related to the mother for me and the nature of the original voice. So sometimes using voices also, I've written over 70 works for the voice. There are moments, I think, when it becomes very ecstatic and you hear the original voice, maybe through a choir or maybe a singer.
Op dit moment werk ik aan een stuk over engelen, gebaseerd op het ritme van inademing en uitademing. Het suggereert de ademhaling van God of van het universum. En natuurlijk is de ademhaling nauw verbonden met de stem. Ik heb zo'n 70 werken voor stem geschreven.
Thank you.
You once said about composing that you try to compose like a vessel without an ego.
Mm.
Is that possible as a composer? Because you have to make choices.
No, it's not possible, but you can try. The voice is always going to be personal, I think. Also, people tell me. And of course, any composer I listen to, I can always tell the voice if I know their work. That's the same for everybody. So that is perhaps the personality. It's not necessarily the ego, but it's something of the ego usually. The point really is, in what state of mind, of consciousness, do you create the art, isn't it? Do you create like a Zen master having undergone a long period of meditation and then perhaps make a calligraphy which is done in 5 seconds after 5 days of meditation? That's a kind of egoless art, I suppose, composing on that level of consciousness. I think one tries to achieve that, but not in such an extreme way, of course. In that, after meditation, or after realizing that one is in a reasonably deep state of consciousness, an idea comes. That idea is very precious, and you try to capture it. Then you use all your techniques that you learned at Cambridge University or with Hans Keller or with your cello teacher, all the people who helped you to gain your techniques. You use all those and then try to capture it. Of course, it's mediated. It's never pure. It's always distorted by mediation. But you try as hard as you can to retain the essence of that given moment.
Componeren zonder ego is niet mogelijk, maar je kunt er naar streven. Een zenmeester zal misschien 5 dagen mediteren en dan in 5 seconden een calligrafie maken. Zo extreem lukt het je als componist niet. Maar ideeën die tijdens de meditatie opkomen zijn heel waardevol. En dan gebruik je alle technieken die je ooit hebt geleerd om ze te pakken te krijgen.
What happens during meditation in a creative way?
Well, a lot of ideas come. In transcendental meditation, it was very obvious. In Buddhist meditation, it's often rather more structured with sutras and saying texts and so on. But in transcendental meditation, it was clear that once you experience something near the zero of no thought, which may only last for 1 second, in those borderlands, the incredible ideas come. I mean, solutions to problems of ordinary life or whatever, but it's like the dreamland. Things, you suddenly wake up and you've got, oh, that's what I should have done. Or that's some very wonderful musical idea. Quite often vague, but very important and very charged with electricity. Or perhaps electricity is not quite the right word. Charged with radiance is a better word. Radiance. Light. There's some very positive strength.
Tijdens meditatie komt veel op. In dat schemergebied liggen allerlei ideeën te wachten, die vaak zijn geladen met elektriciteit, of liever gezegd straling.
You once said, the purpose of music is to reveal the nature of suffering and to heal.
And to heal, yes.
Can you explain that? What is the power of music?
I think music has always been found very healing by people, and probably always will be in most cultures. But I can say all cultures, but it can heal different people in different ways, and people choose their healing music, don't they, for their moments of crisis, their moments when they need consolation, and their spiritual moments when they need to deepen their lives. Their spiritual thirst raises itself, and they look often to music to assuage that thirst. It's not easy to generalize. You can say to somebody, try this, try late Beethoven, try Palestrina, I don't know, try some Indian music, and they may or may not find it works. So it's a subjective matter. What vibrations heal you? I suppose it's possible to study scientifically, and people undoubtedly have done it, and Mozart usually comes very high, and cows give more milk when they are played Mozart, and plants grow better, and all these things have been experimented with, as we know. And Mozart is very much used in psychiatric therapy. Why Mozart should do that is not necessarily very easy to analyze. Of course, the symmetries, the wonderful harmony of architecture, and the fact that Mozart repeats things rather easily to make a symmetrical architecture. But there's also the side of Mozart which is very wild and which disturbed very much his contemporaries. And of course, that's the side that creates the tension. Otherwise, it would just be bland and lacking totally in ambiguity, in richness. So my generalization would be about healing music, that it has to have some degree of ambiguity in order to capture the suffering soul and show it how to heal itself, that there must be some mystery in it.
U hoorde Jacqueline Oskamp in gesprek met Jonathan Harvey. Wagner Dream gaat op 6 juni in première in het Holland Festival. En tot zover deze uitzending. Aanstaande woensdag om 10 uur op deze zender kunt u weer luisteren naar ons magazine Reflecties. Graag tot dan.